The United Way on your apps, on Instagram, Facebook, all of the above. Terry, always good hanging out with you. Have a great weekend.
You too.
Have a good weekend, everybody. We'll be back with more Mornings with WFHR. On Monday, we'll have Morning Magazine coming up for you right here at WFHR.
This is CBS News on the Hour, sponsored by General Steel.
I'm Deborah Rodriguez. Ukraine looks back. A ceremony in Kyiv marked Russia's invasion a year ago today. President Zelensky.
It was a year of endurance, a year of compassion, a year of bravery, a year of pain, a year of hope, a year of perseverance, a year of unity, and we will do everything to win this year.
Secretary of State Antony Blinken tells CBS Mornings.
Ukraine is still standing, it's still free, it's still independent. Putin's first objective was to erase it from the map.
This morning, the White House announced a new round of sanctions on Russian banks, new restrictions on companies that provide Russia's defense with semiconductors. The administration says the U.S. will also apply a 200% tariff on aluminum smelted or cast in Russia. New signs, inflation's on the rise still. CBS News business analyst Jill Schlesinger.
The government said that personal incomes and spending both increased in the month of January. Importantly, the PCE price index was up by 0.6% over the month of January. That's an important index for the Federal Reserve, and it rose more than expected.
Jill says it could prompt the Fed to raise interest rates by 0.5 percentage point next month. Right now, the Dow is down 443 points. Cross-examinations just resumed at Alex Murdaugh's murder trial in South Carolina.
Y'all have started an investigation into what I did in the hospital.
Yesterday, Murdaugh tearfully denied killing his wife and 22-year-old son. Correspondent Nikki Batiste spoke with court spectators in Walterboro.
One man said it was an Academy Award-winning performance. Another young woman said she thought it was a Hail Mary effort and added that she was struck that some of the jurors were crying at one point.
Southern Californians are bundled up for extremely unusual cold and snow. Meteorologist Craig Allen's with our affiliate WCBS.
In some of the highest elevations, above 4,000, 5,000 feet or so, you have blizzard warnings in effect for the region where winds could gust between 40 to 70 miles per hour.
Did you get vaccinated against flu this season? Probably did you some good. Here's CBS's Linda Kenyon.
The CDC reports this year's flu shot has provided substantial protection for all age groups. The agency's Advisory Committee on Immunization Practices also finds the flu vaccine reduced the chance of hospitalization in children by nearly three quarters and in adults by nearly half.
Dow's down 461 right now, S&P off 61. This is CBS News.
Business owners, General Steel can help save you thousands by owning your own custom-designed buildings. Call 888-98-STEEL or visit generalsteel.com.
I'm Martin Hoke, the inventor of Navage Nasal Care, and I love Navage. I've told you about how your nose is the body's air filter, that Navage's powered suction will help flush out allergens, viruses, mucus, and germs, and that Navage will help you breathe better. But what do other people say about Navage? Like Tara, quote, "My doctor wanted me to do saline rinses for my allergies, but I've never been able to successfully use a neti pot. Navage uses suction power, so it's foolproof. There are nights when I'll have particularly bothersome allergies. I'll bust it out, and the results are immediate. It's such a relief. It's become a lifesaver." Unquote. She's one of over 100,000 online reviews praising Navage, the all-natural solution trusted by over 3 million people to help you breathe better, sleep deeper, snore less, and stay healthier without drugs. Navage is available at Walmart, CVS, Walgreens, Target, Rite Aid, and online. Navage, N-A-V-A-G-E, clean nose, healthy life.
Pride.
Left corner three in the way, got it.
Excellence.
Yes, it counts, and a foul.
Commitment.
Drops the hammer, thank you, and good night.
For Badgers, they're not just words, they're words to live by.
It's over, let's have a party, Badger Nation.
This is your radio home for the Badgers.
Catch all the Badgers men's basketball action in the Big Ten this year, right here on WFHR, locally grown radio, your home for Wisconsin sports.
As long as there are veterans, the Benevolent and Protective Order of Elks will never forget them. Throughout the year, Elks members in your community lend a hand, donate money, volunteer time to enrich the lives of this nation's veterans. It's not something these dedicated Americans feel they have to do. It's something they want to do. Join with America's veterans in saluting the efforts of your local Elks Lodge. Elks Care, Elks Share. To find a lodge nearest you, log on to elks.org. In the past, you were involved with the Benevolent and Protective Order of Elks. Today, your local Elks Lodge and community needs your help more than ever. Why? Because needs for helping the youth, veterans, and our communities are greater than available resources. Please consider becoming involved again. Contact your local Elks Lodge and see how little it costs to become reinstated. Visit our website at elks.org. Elks Care, Elks Share.
A message from your Wisconsin Rapids Elks Lodge, number 693.
Here's your forecast from locally grown radio WFHR. Highs level off around 18 this afternoon under overcast skies, winds out of the west around 5 miles per hour. Cloudy skies expected tonight, chance for snow showers, lows dip down to about 11. Mainly sunny skies and calm tomorrow, daytime highs approaching 26. 1 to 2 inches of snow tonight. For Civic Media, I'm meteorologist Jennifer Wojcicki. Currently it's 3 above.
Good morning. You're listening to Central Wisconsin's 24-hour information station, WFHR. It's time now for the Morning Magazine.
Welcome, everyone, to Morning Magazine for this February 24th, 2023. It is 10:06 on the clock, and you have your host, James J. here. At 10:30, we are going to welcome in Craig Broren, Wisconsin Rapids Public Schools Superintendent, and Julie Colcart, the principal of Woodside Elementary. Got plenty to talk about with them. Right now, we have in studio our friend Amy Vetter. She is resource specialist with the Aging and Disability Resource Center of Central Wisconsin. Good morning, Amy.
Good morning, James. How you doing?
I'm doing good. How have you been?
Great.
Good.
Can't complain.
Very good to hear. Very good to hear. How are our friends at the ADRC? How are things going over there?
We're good, too.
Yeah,
good. Can't complain.
We've had some rough days weather-wise here and everything, and yeah. I know Meals on Wheels and some things we weren't able to do. Everything rolling okay today with that?
Yeah, everybody's good. In the office. You know, sometimes when we have weather like that, you know, we don't have our front desk staff, and a lot of us are working from home. But today, it's business as usual. So,
not to spin us off on a completely different direction, but I have been curious about the how working from home in that industry, that can't be always easy to do, but necessary in some sometimes, especially with the way the last 3-4 years have been. Mm-hmm. It sounds like you guys have adapted to that really well.
Yes, and we use a phone service application that is internet-based. Mm. So I can fax, text, do everything through Ring Central. Mm. So we are always connected.
Cool. Very cool.
Yeah, it's very nice.
And this is how good Amy is. That isn't even that why you're here today. You throw you a curveball, you hit it out right away. So you're good at this.
Thank you. I know.
Nice. We're here to talk about family caregiver stress and burnout. Mm-hmm. It's a topic that I feel like we could have you join us every day on Morning Magazine and not cover everything.
Right.
It's one of those topics that has a lot of gray area to it. Mm-hmm. And I think one of the biggest things about it is the definition of what is a family caregiver. Mm-hmm. So let's start right there, Amy, and kind of give that to the audience.
So a family caregiver is somebody that cares for members of their family of origin. However, family can be a loose term because it's often sometimes someone that is your neighbor or your friend, someone that's a member of your church. So family doesn't always mean blood relation.
Yeah.
So, and caregiving isn't always just, you know, physical assistance. It can just be going and spending time with somebody, taking them to medical appointments. You know, it's such a broad term.
Yeah. So, growing up in an Italian family, any Italian knows this. You have an uncle who's not really your uncle.
Right.
Everybody just calls him Uncle Butch or something like that. Mm-hmm. Like, so we're a little used to that.
Yeah.
But in a more genuine sense, this is something that I think is part of what's beautiful about caregiving is that it's great to see a child taking care of a parent or a grandparent, but it doesn't have to be that. All you have to do is care about the person.
Sure.
And that, I don't want to say automatically, but that already begins you becoming a caregiver.
Mm-hmm. And I think a lot of times in some families, it's just assumed that you'll take care of your family when they get older. It's just, that's how it is, you know, and it's really, it doesn't have to look like that. Because the challenge is at times you become that caregiver, and then the line of being daughter or being niece becomes blurred.
Yeah.
And so you're no longer a family member, you are a caregiver. And so that's why having this conversation and knowing how to handle being a caregiver and a family member is really important.
I really think it starts with understanding the definition mm-hmm. and understanding what it is to be yeah. a caregiver. And mm-hmm. once you get that down, yep. all of a sudden a lot of things mm-hmm. start to break down for yep. you.
And how to separate the role.
Yes. You know? Yes. I think that's such a key part of this. Mm-hmm. And I'm so glad that you brought that up. It's something that I don't even think of. And yeah. this isn't the first time that's happened. Mm-hmm. One of the first times that we had some of the members from the ADRC on and we mm-hmm. were talking about caregiving, I was explaining how my father and my mom took mm-hmm. care of my nana as she was in her last years, mm-hmm. dealing with dementia and Alzheimer's.
Sure.
And in that, it was his last memories with her were mm-hmm. that, and how rough that was, how hard it was. But at no point in that did he ever think of himself as a caregiver.
Sure.
He was her daughter. He was his, that was his mom. Mm-hmm. He was just, you know, that's what yeah. you do. You take care of your parents and everything. Mm-hmm. And it was really eye-opening for him to realize, even though it was years later, that he was a caregiver. I think it helped some of the healing for sure. him. I think it helped him feel even closer to her mm-hmm. in those last years, instead of it being, oh, she didn't remember who I was. It was, mm-hmm. oh, I got to spend those last years with her. I got those memories with her.
And I'm really glad that you brought that up, because dementia looks different in every person. And when you are a daughter or a son taking care of your parent with dementia, sometimes dementia can result in behaviors and a complete change in personality. So when you're the sole caregiver, so let's say your parent now is combative, has behaviors, they don't remember who you are, and they are calling you names, mm-hmm. and you're taking care of them, you're no longer going to see them as the wonderful person that they were. And so you're gonna start, it's not black and white, you know,
but
you may start to resent them mm-hmm. and you're not gonna wanna go over and spend time with them. You're going to get angry, you know, and that's why it's so important to try and separate, mm-hmm. you know, and
yeah.
that's why it's really good to take some time for yourself, mm-hmm. you know, and get help and ask for help. You know, you don't have to do everything alone. And even if you're the only family member available to care for your parents, there are resources in the community, and you can call your local Aging and Disability Resource mm-hmm. Center to nice. Offer assistance. But you don't have to do everything alone, because you want to still be the child and still have the parent. You don't want them to pass away with feelings of, you know, relief mm-hmm. that they're gone.
The first rule of journalism is never make the story about yourself. Mm-hmm. And when you're interviewing, you nowadays especially, you want to share some of yourself to pull mm-hmm. the audience in sure. and show relatability, but mm-hmm. don't make it about you.
Right.
So to make it about me for a second.
Yeah, absolutely.
No, but I just, again, to show mm-hmm. how this can happen, I'd say once a month over the last 4 or 5 years, I talk with you guys at the ADRC, mm-hmm. ADRC, and we talk about caregiving a lot.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like I understand the subject far better than I ever have.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't until Pam got me the schedule last week and I saw you're coming up here, and I start thinking about questions for you, and I start thinking about it, and I'm such a poor man's version of my father
mm-hmm.
because now here I am. I wouldn't say I'm taking care of my mom and dad, but I'm helping them a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And I just assume that this is my job. I'm the oldest. My kids are in their 20s. My mm-hmm. my brother and sister, their kids are much younger.
Sure.
I'm in town. They're not. It just makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
So I've been doing this for a couple of years now,
yeah.
and I don't really think of myself as a caregiver. Mm-hmm. I'm not a caregiver. I'm the
right.
oldest. This is what I do.
Mm-hmm.
Here I am doing the same thing my father was doing,
mm-hmm.
and I did not realize until like this weekend.
Yeah.
And I've been doing this for a little while now
sure.
and everything. So I only bring it up as an mm-hmm. example of how easy it can happen,
mm-hmm.
even when you think it's fresh in your mind. It can still happen.
Right.
Understanding that you're a caregiver can mm-hmm. help with the prevention of some of these things that we talked about that can have a negative effect.
Sure.
So let's go there next, if you don't mind. Prevention strategies so that doesn't happen.
Sure. So one thing that I personally think would be beneficial is to have a conversation with your loved ones before they need help, to kind of sit down and talk about, okay, what do we want in place, or when down the road something may happen where I'm going to need some help. How do we want that to look? You know, what are you willing to accept with outside help? Because there are some, you know, tasks there, ADLs and IADLs. ADL is activities of daily living, like taking showers, getting dressed, you know, those kinds of things. And IADLs are instrumental activities of daily living, which is like meal preparation, setting up medications, chores, laundry stuff. So when it comes to personal cares, a lot of times people are very uncomfortable with anybody helping them, which is not a surprise. You know, I don't want anybody helping me take a shower, ever.
yes, I hear you.
Yeah. So having that conversation ahead of time about what they're willing to accept, you know, and how to maybe share the responsibilities can really help for the future, you know. And then other things you can do is kind of talk about respite, you know, when you've got a lot on your plate, your family members need a lot of assistance. What can you do to make sure that you're also caring for yourself as the caregiver? You know, how are you going to make sure that you're taking time out for yourself?
I'm going to write that down just for myself here.
You know, make sure that you're going to your doctor's appointments, you know, making sure that you're taking some time out to do what you still enjoy doing. Because if you focus 100% of your time on somebody else, you're not focusing any of your time on yourself. And then you lose your sense of self. And then you become irritable and angry and resentful.
Yeah. And so, the person you're caring for, I would, I imagine more times than not, doesn't want that for you either.
So absolutely.
You're not helping them out anymore by doing this either. And you can't pour from an empty cup.
I wrote on the top of my notepad, can't pour from an empty cup.
Take
care of yourself first.
The analogy I've always used to me when it comes to this or a lot of topics like this is the being on a plane and they tell you to put your mask on first.
Yeah.
If your child's right there, every instinct in us tells us to put it on the kid first, but then you both pass out. Nobody's helped. You got to put it on you first and then you can take care of others. The more you're able to do that in life, the better the people that you love are going to be are benefit from that.
And I know that can be very difficult for a lot of people. You know, they want to take care of everyone first.
Yeah.
But it's not going to work if you're not caring for yourself.
One of the things that I think a lot of us don't realize until it's too late is that, oh, geez, I'm burnt out of this.
Yeah.
This has burned me to the ground. Like, how do we catch that before it happens? What are some of the signs of burnout?
Lack of energy. Just overwhelming fatigue. Just you can't get out of bed. You know, it can manifest into depression. You know, anxiety, just things that you used to enjoy you don't want to do anymore. Withdrawing from friends and other activities. It can manifest in physical symptoms, so headaches, stomach aches, chronic pain. You know, just you're not going to be able to help the person that needs help if you're physically and mentally not strong enough to take care of yourself.
When you see these things happening, they're noteworthy, and you should make a mental note of these things and keep track of it. Sometimes maybe you just aren't eating enough and drinking enough water or something like that, and that's why you have a headache. But that could also just be, well, why aren't you eating and drinking enough? Maybe because you're putting too much time into this. Maybe. You
know? And sometimes people will realize that they're burning out, but that individual they're caring for only feels comfortable with you helping them. And so that can be very challenging because sometimes we get to a point where, well, they'll only let me help them. And they get upset with me if I say I need somebody else to come in. And, you know, that's when you have to have uncomfortable conversations and say, I understand that you're only comfortable with me helping you, but I can't take care of you by myself. I need help to take care of you the best way that I can, you know. And it is an uncomfortable conversation because you want to be able to help them the way that they want help.
Yeah.
You know,
when it comes to this kind of gray area here of they need help with certain things, but you also want them to still have some, lack of a better word, dignity, mm-hmm. some independence.
Sure.
Finding that line where, mm-hmm. You know, my dad, he'll bring the garbage can back up because mm-hmm. it's empty or sure. whatever. And he gets some exercise and stuff because mm-hmm. you don't want him just sitting there.
Right.
But at the same time, like, he can't, I'll bring it down,
right.
you know, that kind of thing. We have this mm-hmm. deal with that.
Sure.
Is that one of those things that's more organic that you can find, or it's such a case by case thing that you've got to really pick and choose mm-hmm. where you're allowing that stuff or
sure.
where you're accepting of that yeah. kind of thing?
I think it is a case by case situation. Mm-hmm. And there are a lot of people that are nervous or not willing to accept that they need help.
Yeah.
They're very independent people. They're very proud. And
yeah, they're called Italians.
Yeah.
I'm just kidding. I'm joking.
We're German.
yes, very true.
In my family. But, you know, they don't want to be a burden on anybody.
Yeah.
They don't want to admit that it's time to get some help. And so sometimes I will encourage family members to say, well, you know, do this for me, you know, because it'll give me peace of mind, Mom, if you will wear a lifeline.
Mm.
You know, mm-hmm. I know that you don't fall, or I know that you just accidentally trip.
Yeah.
And it's only happened the one time and you don't want to wear this, but it'll make me feel better if you
yeah.
do it. You know, kind of spin it that way.
Oh, yeah.
So
it actually mm-hmm. is full circle for me, because mm-hmm. that's what my mother would do to me all the time, and it always worked on me.
Yeah.
Why not turn it right back?
Yeah, I know my family's listening, so I'm not gonna.
Yeah, right.
I'm
on,
not
right
gonna
on. Yeah,
say
yes.
anything.
but I love yeah. the idea of that too. And because it also reminds you of the connection you have with mm-hmm. that person,
right?
And kind of going mm-hmm. back to what you were saying about that, because I think that is one of the more noteworthy things that we've had in our conversations mm-hmm. is the role change and. Mm-hmm. Forgetting that
yeah.
Some of that stuff.
Yeah.
That's an interesting point that you made about mm-hmm. that. What about?
And our parents have taken care of us, you know?
Yeah.
And so when they get older and they need help, it's our turn to take care of them.
Yeah. Agreed.
It's a role reversal, like you said.
Physical and mental effects. Mm-hmm. Let's touch on that a little
sure.
bit of noteworthy mm-hmm. things there.
You're more prone to illness.
Mm-hmm.
If you're not, you know, lifting properly or helping with transfers and everything, you're going to have some back pain and, you know, prone to physical injury. But your mental health, just depression, anxiety, migraines, headaches, just a whole number of different physical and mental health. It can manifest in so many different ways.
The compassion fatigue, mm-hmm. this is an interesting one.
Sure. Let me consult my notes.
Yeah, right on.
So this is an interesting topic, mm-hmm. and I'm still learning about it. But compassion fatigue is physical, emotional, and psychological impact of helping others, often through experiences of stress or trauma. Mm-hmm. So burnout refers to general exhaustion and lack of motivation or interest regarding someone's work. So burnout can occur in any profession.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, but compassion fatigue refers to the negative emotions that someone feels from helping others at work.
Hmm.
So it's very broad, you know, and we can kind of dig into this a little bit more.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm kind of, what I kind of get from that is burnout, you can get burned out in any job. In factory work, like, you're not feeling appreciated,
mm-hmm.
you know, you're not getting what you
Absolutely.
Need from your supervisors or your coworkers, you know, and compassion fatigue, I feel like can be from a caregiving role
mm-hmm.
and you're not getting any help from anybody else. Or let's say you're being a caregiver for your parents with mm-hmm. dementia that has behaviors and is saying things that are inappropriate and hurtful, and that can be traumatic and that can lead to compassion fatigue.
Mm.
And that's kind of how I'm interpreting it. I'm not saying that's correct, but that's the way
I think that's
I took
a,
it.
That's a good way to, I think that's a good
and that's
definition.
That's a newer term, I believe.
Yeah, yes, it
you
is.
You know, it's not something that is commonly used, to my knowledge.
I think you, along with many people in your position, in your field, mm-hmm. are figuring out the definition
mm-hmm.
and of it. Because it is newer,
mm-hmm.
and from the research, a bit that I could find,
mm-hmm.
You're... many, many people are looking to add to the definition mm-hmm. to help sure. define it more clearly as right. we go forward. Mm-hmm. But just being aware of it and mm-hmm. being in tune with these kind of things is going to help you going forward with any of this stuff, mm-hmm. whether it's a specific definition that applies to you or sure. not.
And I think what's important is being aware that it exists and kind of having a general understanding so that you can pick up on if you feel that coming on and how to stop it or how to address it before it becomes an issue.
Doing the homework over the weekend on this and have in the past and talking about it and then thinking about how it affects me and mm-hmm. what I'm doing in that, one of the things that I think the most common thing I saw was the theme of communication mm-hmm. and how important that is.
Yes.
Communicating with the mm-hmm. caregiver and vice versa.
Sure.
Is there, and I don't want to say tips, mm-hmm. but is there things that you've learned in the process of doing this and communicating with mm-hmm. People that you say, this is a great tone, this is a great way to approach mm-hmm. things? You know, we've touched a little bit on this, but mm-hmm. just maybe even some more pointers, for lack of a better word.
Sure. So I think the most important thing is to go in with the understanding that everybody communicates differently and everybody listens differently and hears differently. Mm. So maybe starting the conversation with, how can I best communicate with you? Hmm. You know, and how can I best express, you know, what I need with
That's
you?
That's good.
You know, help me understand what you need.
Yeah.
You know, because even though you may say something 100 times to someone, you can say it the same way 100 okay. times and feel so frustrated because they're not getting it. But maybe because the way you're communicating it to them is not how they hear or listen or understand. So maybe trying to change your phrasing or just say, how can I best communicate this to you mm-hmm. would be a good starting point.
Most all of us learn differently. Mm-hmm. Some people yes. learn by doing, some yep. people learn by watching. Mm-hmm. Communicating is very similar.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Understanding how, you know, are they... Yeah, they can be the most affectionate person mm-hmm. in the world, but they don't use words doing it. They
yes.
express through this mm-hmm. or they express through that.
Right.
And maybe you're the opposite. Mm-hmm. So kind of finding the common ground with something mm-hmm. like that.
Yes. And that's mm-hmm. communication is the key to any relationship, be it Agreed. Professional, romantic, any relationship.
Here.
And just being aware that everybody's different.
We another time when we have more time to really dive into this, I did want to talk about encouraging people out there listening who are maybe on the fence about a career choice, mm-hmm. about going into this world and into mm-hmm. this field. We could always use more people in it and everything. Mm-hmm. But as far as kind of like a fast forward of that conversation, what are some of the skills that make you a good caregiver and you may notice in yourself that could make you a good caregiver?
Knowing how to separate and leaving work at work, especially in social work.
Yeah.
There is a high burnout rate in this field. And it's very challenging because you hear a lot of things and it's very hard to leave work at work. You bring it home with you. And if you don't find a way to separate and leave your client or your caregiver situation that wasn't the right word, but what I mean, but if you can't leave it there mm-hmm. and then come home and just go about your life mm-hmm. and do what you need, you're going to burn out.
It seems like one of the best things for caregivers is having that good support group themselves.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And I'm glad you mentioned that. But the ADRC does have support groups throughout our region. We serve four counties, Marathon, Lincoln, Langlade, and Wood. Mm-hmm. And if you are interested in learning more, you can go right ahead and call our phone number at 888-486-9545 and get more information. We have different support groups and tools for caregiver success. And it's really beneficial even if our support groups don't fit your timeline or your needs, there are a lot of other options out there. Get help. You're mm-hmm. not alone.
Yeah.
If you're feeling overwhelmed, you know,
yeah.
it's okay to say, I need help.
Yeah.
And it's important to say it.
And all that does is make you like all, every one of us, like the rest of us. Mm-hmm. You're just human.
Yeah.
Sorry,
yeah.
But
exactly.
Yeah, you're like the rest of us. And that's okay. That's okay. We also, I did want to make sure to, before we let you go, Amy mentioned that the ADRC is always looking for good volunteers.
Always.
People that can help with Meals on Wheels or preparing those meals, the in-dining service, any of the above.
Even in the ADRC offices.
Yeah.
Just
yeah.
helping us with different tasks.
It's a great use of your time and looks great on a resume or a college resume or anything like that.
And you can
as well.
Hang out in the office with me. And I'm pretty cool.
That seems like a good enough reason right there. Sign up, everybody. Yeah. Reach out to our friends at the ADRC. You can find out more going to the website adrc-cw.org. adrc-cw.org. Always good talking to you, Amy. Thanks so much for the time.
And I just need to say hi, Grandma and Grandpa and Grandma Roby in Missouri. And hi, Isabel.
Got to get them all in.
Oh,
gotta
yeah.
cover the bases.
There's more. There's so many. We don't have that kind of time. Though.
The next time. We'll make sure to be more, okay. leave more time at the
I'll
end
just bring
the
a interview. List.
There you go. Yeah, so. Then we don't forget anybody. Thank you, Amy.
Thank
appreciate
you so much,
it.
James.
We'll be back with more Morning Magazine right here at WFHR, locally grown radio.
Light the lamp.
All the way down, he scores! A 200-foot empty net goal for the captain.
And defend the ice.
Driving in, centering pass. Oh, great sliding left pad save.
This is America's college hockey capital.
Fire one towards the net and scores.
This is your radio home for Wisconsin Badger hockey.
Right here on WFHR, locally grown radio, your home for Wisconsin sports.
We may be thousands of miles apart, but we can still connect. And when we do, we make things better. At Child Fund, we connect children all around the world with what they need to grow up healthy, educated, and safe. Together, we co-create connections that help millions of children who live in poverty worldwide, and their families, and their communities, and you. Join us. Together, we can make the world a better place. Two small worlds at a time. Visit childfund.org to learn more.
As Goes Wisconsin with Kristen Bry.
J.R. Radcliffe is coming back to the show. The timeline of Brett Favre's involvement in a welfare scam in Mississippi.
Brett Favre's camp has denied all wrongdoing. Like, he really feels like he did nothing wrong. So I guess he's a little burned by that.
Celebrating all things Wisconsin. As Goes Wisconsin with host Kristen Bry. Weekdays 11 to 2 on Civic Media and the Civic Media app.
I'm looking at the phone lines. I'm seeing some familiar faces. What's in mind of Gene of Eau Claire?
Well, welcome back, Matt. I really miss you. We've been missing getting woke every morning, but now we'll get woke in the afternoon.
What's in mind of Andrew of Detroit?
Professor, it's so nice you're back. We missed you during your vacation, and I'm very happy to be in your class for the semester.
Thanks a lot for calling in. I appreciate all my callers.
Tune in to Matt Flynn Direct, Monday through Friday, 3 to 4 p.m.
Here's your forecast from locally grown radio WFHR. Highs level off around 18 this afternoon under overcast skies, winds out of the west around 5 miles per hour. Cloudy skies expected tonight, chance for snow showers, lows dip down to about 11. Mainly sunny skies and calm tomorrow, daytime highs approaching 26. 1 to 2 inches of snow tonight. For Civic Media, I'm meteorologist Jennifer Wojcicki. Currently it's 3 above.
Good morning, and welcome back to The Morning Magazine. It's time for part two.
Welcome, everybody, to Morning Magazine for this February 24th, 2023, part two. We are welcoming in the studio right now. We have friends of ours, Craig Broren, Wisconsin Rapids Public Schools Superintendent. Good morning, Craig.
Good morning.
And Julie Kolarik.
That's right.
Oh, all right. Write that down, Pam. I actually got it right. Principal of Woodside Elementary School. Thank you so much for being here, Julie.
Thanks for having us, James.
It's nice to have you both here. How's everybody doing this morning? Everybody doing all right? Craig, you are?
I know I understand what the commentary is there, James. I appreciate that. Yeah, we're doing fine. All Good. Of the snow has been cleared. I understand some buses were running a bit late this morning. I think that has more to do with just... taking our time because, of course, roads are still a little bit snow covered, but not anywhere near what it was like yesterday and the day before. So,
yeah, we're going to get into a little of that and talk about an update with the Wisconsin Rapids Public Schools with Craig. But first, Julie, it's the first time she's joining us, so of course I have to put her on the spot first. But no, thank you for being here, Julie, and taking the first reins here. Can we get an update on Woodside and how things are going over there to start things off?
Yeah, for sure. We have lots of great things going on at Woodside, and one of the main reasons that I want to talk about is this outdoor area that we're developing through a generous grant of the Legacy Foundation. We have a $1.7 million project that's been funded with a $1.2 million grant from the Legacy Foundation and a matching grant through the school district of $300,000. And our outdoor campus portion is going to be phenomenal, which means it's going to match the inside, our students and staff, which are already phenomenal. So I'm very excited about that.
What is, for people that are just maybe just hearing about it, though, I've only heard a little bit of maybe the headlines of the Learning Center and that. What can we tell them about this and how it's going to benefit these kids and teachers?
Sure, for sure. So this is my fifth year at Woodside, and one of the first things that we did when I came to Woodside is figure out what's going well, what can we do better, and one of the things that came out were our facilities on the outside. At Woodside, roughly 20% of our population are students with special needs, and our outdoor environment, though we had some things in it, it really wasn't great. So we needed more experiences where kids could play with one another and, you know, just get some outside experience out there. And so this was born then in 2018, and then COVID, right? And so things took a little bit of a pause for, I don't know, feels like 17 years, but 3 years. And so this came up again. And so this is really born from our students and our staff, and it's looking at our campus, and we're updating all of our playgrounds to be accessible and inclusive for our students, and that's the portion that's fully funded. We're hoping to continue to raise money, so I'm hoping that anybody that's listening here today and that would like to get involved can go to our website, you know, www.woodsidepride.com and donate, and we're hoping to have an outdoor classroom as part of this and some pickleball courts. And the main wonderful thing for our students and staff, of course, are what we can do during the day. But this facility would be available to our entire community. And I think that was really the draw for the Legacy Foundation, is just how amazing it'll be for Wisconsin Rapids.
Opening things up and having it something that the community can use certainly is going to bring more people in. It's also going to bring more people not only physically to Woodside, make them more familiar with it, and hopefully make them a little more in tune with you know, what's going on at the school, what's going on with our public schools, and understanding that a little bit more. I think, you know, especially as many times as you and I have talked about this, Craig, when it comes to this kind of modern influx of people and barking and these kind of things and all that stuff, so much of that stuff stems from not talking to your kids, not talking to teachers, not being on the school grounds, not seeing what's actually happening. People usually fear things when they don't understand or they don't know the answers to something. If you give them the answers, they not have as much to fear, as much to bark about. It just seems like another added bonus of this is another opportunity to bring community members to Woodside, to a public school, and then to see what it's like and to see that, hey, there isn't really much to bark about.
Right. Well, and that's the piece, I think you highlighted it, that you said well, which is the fact that we're public. And so clearly everybody knows that if they have an elementary school in their neighborhood, that if there's a decent playground there, I'm sure their kids play on it, you know, anytime that school's not in session. And this is no different. I think the primary difference is going to be the size and scale, because for $1.5 million plus dollar project, it's going to be one heck of a nice playground area and outdoor learning center. But on the same hand, the thing that makes it the most intriguing and why we think it's going to be a draw for people even from outside of the community to come and use it is because of the fully accessible features. So there's kids that can, with limited mobility or other special needs, that can do largely the same thing as their fully abled peers can do, playing tag or, you know, the floor is lava games or whatever we always like to do as a kid on a playground structure. And of course, the size and scale and the location is fantastic in terms of, you know, its continuity with both the city and Grand Rapids. But it'll be one of the few fully accessible large scale playgrounds and outdoor learning spaces in our area, I think, comparable to what's in Point. And I can't, what's the name of that park, Julian Point?
Cache Park.
Yeah, there you go. So if people have some idea, and I've never been there, but having three little kids prior, now my kids are not totally grown, but, you know, older now, we're not at parks. But back in the day, we'd travel to different communities to use their parks because it's a good time. And so we also think something like that is going to transpire, which is a benefit just to the Rapids area. So, yeah, that idea of that partnership, as well as incorporating all needs and abilities and those sorts of things are huge for public schools. And I think that underpinning is what people can probably recognize or perhaps support the most, and that is we don't get to pick, which is great. That, that's beneficial. Any kid, regardless of their size, shape, color, ability level, or anything other, any other characteristic or qualifier, comes to our schools, and they're certainly welcome, and we do our best to provide them a quality education. And in this case, with this project, a quality life experience, too, both during school and outside of school.
As great as tag and the floor is lava game is, and it's so great, Pam and I are actually playing that right now. That's why my feet are not on the ground. Those are great games. It's also great to be able to have things for kids that maybe can't play some of those games, like tag or that kind of thing. And I think that that's a part of... I don't want to say a part of society we forget about, but a part that we kind of, kids, we just lump them all into one group, kids, and just put them under one umbrella. And as being former kids, like all of us are, we you could might maybe remember, not one of us were, no two were alike. Not even twins are completely alike. So we need things for different kids. And most importantly, kids that may not have it the same as other kids. When it comes to that, do you think that there's going to be more of this with other elementary schools having maybe being more accessible for kids that have? So I Julie brought up a stat there, 20% of the kids at Woodside being that way. I wouldn't know that otherwise, and I wouldn't have guessed something like that. That I'm never going to forget that. That's important information. I think that me as a citizen should know that stuff. And I think it makes me more empathetic, more understanding, and more like, yeah, let's get this done. Those kids deserve to play too. Do you think we could see more of that?
I don't think I know. Yeah, so I don't want to let spool too much out here, but sure. The conversation I had recently, not yesterday, but the day before, I'm getting my days mixed up with the snow days and whatnot.
Time's a flat circle.
Yeah. on Wednesday, conversation, and ultimately what's going to transpire is we're going to put together a comprehensive plan to address some of these things at multiple sites within the district that benefit communities. And I'm being somewhat amorphous in my description because, frankly, we just got the word that something like that over a multi-year period might come to fruition. So we just had an all-admin meeting yesterday to begin the conversation on developing a comprehensive plan to put in place. So I'm hoping that some point, maybe in the next 60 days, or so, I'll be on and I'll tell you about all the cool things that are going to happen over the next 3 to 5 years with our schools and in our communities.
I'm looking forward to that.
Yeah.
Julie, I don't want to wrap up things at Woodside just yet. Are there things that the community, you think it'd be good to know that's going on over there at Woodside? Certainly the outdoor play, our Learning and Activity Center is noteworthy, and we could talk about that the whole show if you'd want, but I know that there's a lot going on over there at Woodside. So are there other things and just that you're noticing at Woodside that you think would be good for the community to know about?
Yeah, definitely. I think that all of our professionals that come to school every day, and I think everybody knows this, you go into public education because you care about kids. And I think it's not unique, I'm sure Craig can speak to that, to Woodside itself, but man, our professionals, our staff, from amazing Michelle and Nicole in our office at Woodside to, you know, our custodian Ryan, everybody is doing this for the kids. And that is just something I can say, but you would come to Woodside or any of our schools, I would gather, you can feel it. And I don't think that, you know, we hear these things in the news about schools and we hear some of the things that they're doing well and some of the things that they're not. I'm telling you, people are working their tail off and they're there for the kids. And the kids feel it too. I mean, we get the joy from the kids. So in a huge nebulous kind of way, just just overall, the feeling that's intangible is just amazing at Woodside, and dare to say at all of our schools. You know, there's heart here. Specifically, we do lots of things for our kids, and they do lots of things for us. You know, every month we try and have somebody from the community that comes in. I don't know, maybe at some point, maybe next month, I don't know, a remote location for a radio show or something
that. I like the sound of that. I like that.
So we're always looking for things and bringing community members in. Last month, we had the River Kings in. At the end of the year, we'll have our Woodside graduates that will come back. Our phrase is, once a lumberjack, always a lumberjack. Pam in the front office.
That's right.
So lots of great things like that.
What is one of the primary ways that you support teachers? And how do you do that while supporting parents at the same time? You know, it's not an easy something that you can necessarily learn in a book. You've got to kind of learn through the job and through the process. How have you found the best ways to do that?
That's a great question. I think it's with anything, whether it's teachers or any person, a parent is to listen. Everybody's got their perception of their reality, and it's always good to hear that from the person. And then, you know, I think in education, our minds are always going 27 miles a minute, and we're thinking, okay, you're saying this. What do I need to do next? We're fixers. And so just giving that opportunity for whether it's the staff to share what's going on and thinking about, okay, you know, is this something that's actionable? Can we do something about it? Do they just want to share this so we're aware? I think that's the number one thing with anybody is just to listen. And then if there's something that needs to be done, do it.
Very well said. And it's funny how often that is the answer. Listening, communicate, you know, when it comes to this stuff, talking to each other, listening to each other, that's the big key to whatever the solution or whatever word it is we're discussing. We are discussing a lot with Craig and Julie, and we're going to do that some more of that when we come back from commercial break here on Morning Magazine at WFHR, where we are locally grown radio.
Wisconsinites are proud to have their roots run deep with agriculture. For some, it's a way of life. Proudly supporting our farmers and the FFA, Carrie Van Ert and Rosemary Pitsley from State Farm recognize the unique needs of farmers and ranchers, no matter the size of the operation, whether you own or rent, or raise crops or livestock. State Farm policies are tailored to meet your unique insurance needs. Contact Carrie Van Ert in Wisconsin Rapids and Rosemary Pitsley of Adams Friendship today.
The Devil's Advocates Radio Show, the last segment of the day. If you got something to say, hit us up right now for your crew to tase at 844-967-2789.
I thought they were Crudy Takes.
Crudy's Takes. See, man, it all comes back around to Sports Talk Live.
Something like that.
My wife wants some vegetables for crudité.
You know what I mean?
Listen Monday through Friday from 4 to 6 p.m. for the Devil's Advocates Radio Show.
I was just curious as to why you called it the Paul Revere Show.
The Paul Revere Show is named this way because the poem that we all know, the famous ride, the poem was written to rally the troops to fight slavery and fight for democracy. And so I named the show the Paul Revere Show because I thought it was the time to get on the air and talk about democracy.
The Paul Revere Show with Mark Thompson. Listen Monday, 7 to 8 p.m., always on the Civic Media app.
Here's your forecast from locally grown radio, WFHR. Cloudy skies this afternoon with daytime highs approaching 18. Westerly winds around 5 miles per hour. Overcast skies again tonight. Chance of snow showers. Lows level off around 11. Highs level off around 26. Tomorrow, mainly sunny skies and calm. 1 to 2 inches of snow tonight. For Civic Media, I'm meteorologist Jennifer Vujcicki. Currently, it's 9 above.
Thanks a lot, Jennifer. Appreciate the updates. Welcome back, everybody, to the to Morning Magazine here at WFHR for this February 24th, 10:47 on the clock, speaking with Craig and Julie. And Craig, I wanted to put you on the spot. I mean, ask you some questions. I wanted to get an update on the Wisconsin Public Schools area.
Yeah, perfect. So the good segue is if the listeners recall the opening minutes of the program today was that we just came off a couple of closures, and there's been several this year, which is unfortunate when the weather doesn't cooperate. You know, potentially more. They're talking about ice, possibly a quarter to half inch of ice Monday morning. If we see something like that, clearly running buses and driving around isn't going to be super great. But We do have virtual / offsite learning capability. And one of the pieces that kind of has been tossed around is, you know, what are the expectations during that time and how does that look for parents? Because clearly still making the decisions around school closures is never an easy decision because there's impacts. Planning, childcare, and those impacts are significant. And so it's still not something that we're going to take flippantly and just pretend like, oh, people can figure it out because it's just easier for us to not run buses, for example, or not have school. But with that said, the alternative, because there's expectations in state statute and federal obligations in terms of IEPs and other aspects mm-hmm. that we have to commit to a certain number, a minimum number of hours of instruction in a school year. And for those that have been around town for a while, remember in the 18-19 school year, we had 7 closures that year. 1 week was 4 days long. We closed for 4 days, 2 for ice and then 2 for like minus 45 wind chills. And so when you have a closure for 4 days and in that time, we weren't equipped or set up to do comprehensive offsite or virtual learning on closure days. And so what we ended up having to do is extend the school day. We added, I think it was like 8 or 10 minutes and then added days to the calendar. Clearly, there's an impact to doing that, too. However, we have no choice when you're talking about meeting the obligations of our statutory obligations and meeting those hours of instruction. When you're doing offsite / virtual learning, offering it and having the capability of providing some academic supports and resources and engagement during that time can count. Mm-hmm. Now, what does that look like? What if I'm a kid that doesn't have access to virtual? Well, at our elementary levels, primarily we do like take-home packets, and there is some stuff online that if parents can access, they can do. If not, that's not a problem either. Keep in mind that we run school normally in person. There's reasons that kids are absent every day. Mm-hmm. So the expectation isn't 100% participation on virtual or offsite learning days, but it is offered and available, and academic and other supports transpire during that time. And we will then avert having to add days to the calendar or largely modify the school schedules to meet this hour and minute requirement. Now, I'll also say, is that the same as in-person learning? No. And no one is claiming that it is. But it's kind of like finding the sweet spot when we know via our learning through the pandemic, when in some cases it was forced upon us, that it's 2023 and doing something off-site on a sporadic or periodic basis makes all kinds of sense and still meeting our obligations both as professionals and under the Wisconsin statutes. So that's kind of that happy medium there. And then another quick update would be to say we just had a board primary. So you and I have talked prior, mm-hmm. James, about local politics is the most important politics. Mm-hmm. And so what I would simply say to that is have folks educate themselves in terms of what their options are, not only for the school board race coming up here in April, but we have a race for a new judge mm-hmm. seat here in Wood County, Supreme Court, and then, of course, there'll be multiple other things on the ballot come April as well. And that engagement, politically speaking, at the local level is huge. So I'd toss that out there as a relatively recent circumstance as well.
Mm-hmm. Agreed. Do your homework, everybody. One of the things, I couldn't help myself, that was a pun. I didn't mean to make it, but it is a pun right there.
I liked it.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you. That's nice of you, Julie. It wasn't worth it, though. When it comes to, for you, the same similar question I had for Julie, but with more so with principals, what is your primary way you support principals in this area that you try to?
Try to stay out of their hair. It's interesting. So they're, technically, as the superintendent, you're responsible for every staff member we employ, technically.
Right, right.
But of course, the direct supervision piece is around our administrators. And I think our elementary buildings highlight the complexity and nuance of this because we have 7 elementary schools, Woodside, of course, being one of them. Julie's probably going to tell you it's the best one. I'm gonna,
so true.
Of course, reserve comment. They all do quite well. Woodside, of course, does as well. But my point is that they all have very different and unique identities, right? And supervision of professionals in a school environment, it would be similar to other circumstances in which medicine, for example. If you are a supervising doctor in some capacity, you're not telling each doctor how they should do it based on what you think. You cultivate and grow an attitude of collaboration as well as some freedom and autonomy because they're professionals themselves and have this capability. When you couch that in knowing that our buildings all have unique identities and unique staff, unique clientele, and all these other unique communities, all these other aspects, it only makes sense that some things are cohesive and done district-wide and other things are not. Mm-hmm. And it is not a supervisory relationship where I am micromanaging what's happening in seven different elementary schools or 11 or 12 school buildings. That would be impossible. Mm-hmm. I'm one human being. I don't want to do that, nor am I able to do that. But it's that balance of providing what the framework is or the expectations are, and then, of course, providing supports to meet those expectations in that framework, but also having that latitude and ability to run and guide your building as you see fit and as your staff sees fit, frankly, because that's also directed somewhat by staff and somewhat by kids. So it's not just as easy as it is in some supervisory capacities where you say, this is what you do, this is how you do it when you're here. There's some of that, but the nuance and the beauty of the job, there can't be parameters created to be that prescriptive.
Very well said. Very well said, Craig. Just real quick, 1 second. Julie, we have a dome over at Washington Elementary. I'm just, you know, nothing against Woodside, but Washington has a dome. So, it's pretty cool. So, I just want to get into a little back and forth with you about that because I love this. One of the things that I think that is important that we've discussed today is communication, is talking. And I think that when we're talking about some of the issues that we have nowadays with schooling and that, they are so quickly answered by simply talking to people, to whether it's your kids, whether it's the teachers, whether it's Craig or Julie or anybody like that. I think that you can have a lot of a quick conversation or a long thought end in a quick conversation just by asking questions. I also think that there's a lot to be said for the openness and transparency of you and the way you've carried the position, Craig, the way that other principals and people do in this area. I think that that goes a long ways too, and it's helpful. Appreciated, but it also doesn't always seem like it's the easiest thing to do. So for people out there that don't know anything about this, and maybe you're far removed from school and everything, I'd like to ask, what is one of the more difficult parts of the job that you don't think people would, you know, your average person would understand? Julie, I'd like to start with you with that.
Great. You know what, as you're asking that, I think it's that balance. When we send our kids to school, our own personal kids, you have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 kids that you're sending, and they're your heart and soul, right? And then when they come to school, we have our teachers in the classroom, and they have 30, roughly 20 hearts and souls on there. And when your child comes home, and this goes back to what you said earlier about this communication piece, and goes home and says, hey, X, Y, and Z happened in school today, you get that one piece. Mm-hmm. And I think sometimes one of the hardest things is balancing, you know, when a parent comes in and says, hey, Susie said X, Y, and Z mm-hmm. happened. And the hardest thing is to help them realize that not that your child, their perception might be actually different of what happened. Having that conversation where, like, okay, this is what we saw, this is what we happened. So I think that sometimes can be challenging because oftentimes that communication isn't just as straightforward. And I wish it were more mm-hmm. of that in many cases. So I think there's that. I think the other challenging, you had asked what's so challenging that people don't understand. I don't know. There used to be some statistic about the decisions that a teacher makes on a daily basis. Yeah. It's very similar to a doctor in surgery. Yes. And I don't think that people get that. You've got 20, 30 kids in there. And you're thinking about this kid and what they're doing right now and how to help them today, tomorrow, and 2 weeks from now. But you're also thinking of the other 25 kids and what they're doing. And you're noticing behavior. And I think that delicate balancing act of seeing it all, knowing it all, and doing something about it all in a second, in a moment, in 2 years, you know, down the line is, I think I wish more people understood that. That's the challenging part. Teaching's an art and a science. It's beautiful, but it's also challenging.
Appreciate that insight. Thank you for that. Mm-hmm. And I will note that I teach as young as 17 and as old as 60, 65, and just completely see exactly what you're talking about. And at the same time, understand that I can't relate to that. I get it on a certain level, but I also understand that I don't understand. And that's part of what empathy is about. And that's what I'm trying to do with this question here, is create a little more empathy and put people in your guys' shoes, so that maybe when it comes to some of this barking and all that kind of thing, that maybe you have a little more understanding going into this stuff. I'm not saying that you should have concerns. They're your kids. You should care about that. That's not a bad thing. But how you go about that care, how you direct that concern, I think is very key to this. So you can do a lot with what is it our moms always said, you get more bees with honey. Mm-hmm. It's going to be a lot more better if you can be a little more empathetic. Craig, how about for you when it comes to that, like as far as things of the job that we wouldn't understand? And I think it's a little more broad for you, because I don't think people understand nearly enough about what it is to be a superintendent.
Yeah, well, I mean, so I alluded to it earlier, but yeah, I'm responsible for the organization, and that is reflected down to an hour and a half a day noon duty aide and her or his behavior, for example. We have around 800 employees and individuals making decisions on a regular basis. And sometimes those are the great decisions. Most of the time, those are great decisions. And sometimes it might be a poor decision. One of the things that I've always said is I've never claimed to be perfect, and nor have I claimed that our schools are perfect. On the same hand, I do think intent is super important. Mm-hmm. This is my 22nd year in education. I think Julia's put in a similar number of years, 13 years as a superintendent, and held multiple positions, including coach, teacher, athletic director, principal, so forth. The long and short of it is, during that entire time, over two decades, I have never met an individual that comes into work at a school thinking, God, I really want to screw with kids today.
Yeah, right.
It just makes no sense.
No.
That is not the underpinning. Mm-hmm. The underpinning is, you know what, I made a mistake, potentially, and it's impacting your kids, so now let's figure out how we rectify that. Or you don't have the full story. Mm-hmm. And